Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
One of my favorite segments of the week, Blake's Podcast, SEC Unfiltered, available each and every week on Twitter at BTopmeyer. Blake, where are you headed this weekend?
I am actually taking Saturday off. I'm covering two games the following week, Egg Bowl and Iron Bowl, and you combine that with this lackluster slate this weekend. I'm taking it easy tomorrow.
You didn't want to maybe go back to Como?
No, although that is like the interesting.
I was going to say,
interesting game of the week.
Could he get kiffened? Could he get left at the tarmac?
Boy, that's a cold place to be left in November too.
Oh,
I was
looking
at the forecast. He's lucky. The Gators are lucky overall because it's a little warmer than I would expect here in mid to late November. If you look back in recent years, athletic directors don't handle losing to Missouri well. Yeah, Derek Mason.
Well, I mean, you got to understand, Blake. It's a traditional SEC East rival.
Yeah, exactly. But no, seriously, I was looking the last few years. So Derek Mason and Vanderbilt lose to Missouri last year in the Sarah Fuller game. Mason fired afterwards. You go back to 2017. Butch Jones loses 50-17 to Missouri.
Fired
the next day. Brett Bielema loses to Missouri to end that season. Maybe he was going to get fired anyway, but fired immediately after, before Bielema even got into the press conference.
No, that was the thing. Remember, the reports had leaked in like the third quarter.
Yeah, right.
There weren't even zeros on the clock, and he was fired.
Yeah, which makes you believe Bielema was maybe gone anyway. But that game was going downhill against Missouri, so that was that. If you look back in recent years, you don't want to risk losing to Missouri, and it's certainly not when you're the coach at Florida.
Well, and here's my question, Blake, when it comes to Mullen in Florida at this point. Let's say he wins this game against Missouri, and let's say this thing ends respectably. Like he beats Florida State and whatever we see, you know, whatever.
They bring in Jimmy Lake to coordinate the defense.
But, like, how many coaches come back from this loud a chatter about their job status, even if you bring them back? You know, like, we're seeing, like, I think Virginia Tech is a good example of this. Like, last year, the AD at Virginia Tech had to have a press conference to explain why he's bringing Justin Fuente back. Feels like Florida's going to sort of have to do the same thing in a weird way because there's been so much chatter. Like, do we really see Dan Mullen totally being able to turn this around, and not even by his own doing at this point, but just, like, it feels really toxic now given how everyone's talked about this team and this program the last month or so?
You really don't see guys come back from this. I'm trying to come up with a good example.
So I got a couple of them.
Can't.
Brian Kelly, remember they went 4-8, and then
he
did a complete program overhaul. Like, he got rid of coordinators, everything, complete overhaul.
And we're sort of seeing Jim Harbaugh is doing it this year a little bit.
That was going to be my example. I mean, I think they overhauled it there. I'll tell you what, this actually, it's not beat for beat the same. It's really similar to Mullen at State in 2013. Same thing kind of happened. Tyler Russell was playing quarterback, and he was just kind of meh. Wasn't bad, wasn't great, just kind of meh. Well, then there was this sophomore that every time he got on the field, you're like, this guy's awesome. It was Dak Prescott. And they went into the Egg Bowl, and neither Russell nor Prescott were dressed. They play a guy, I think his name was like Damian Williams, and then Laramie Tunsil for Ole Miss got hurt early in the game, and they pull off a big upset of Ole Miss when a lot of people were saying, like, hey, this might be Mullen's last night if he gets beat, especially if he gets beat bad. Well, then they turned around the next year. The program got ranked number one. You know, they go to the Orange Bowl. They had a good year. And then he kind of salvaged it from there. But, man, I don't know. It just feels like the difference, though, is Florida's expectation isn't 9-3. You know, what does he have to do next year? Like, what does he have to do next year that everyone is at least satisfied?
Right. That's the thing. You know, rallying off the hot seat at Mississippi State in some ways is a lot easier than it is at Florida. I mean, it's harder to win games at Mississippi State than it is at Florida. But like you said, the expectations are so high at Florida. Like, if he comes out and goes 8-4, 9-3 next year, is that good enough? I don't know. I mean, I still think there's going to be, you know, a strong segment of the fan base that, you know, shy of going like 11-1 next year, they're not going to be satisfied because they've already closed the book on the Dan Mullen era. It reminds me of my first season covering Tennessee here in Knoxville in 2017. I get into town just before the season opener. And, you know, Vols are coming off of their second straight 9-win season, but they had a chance to be in Atlanta that year, and they blew it. And coming into that season, Butch Jones was already on the hot seat. You know, whether the administration wanted to admit it or not, he was, because such a strong percentage of the fan base of Tennessee fans, they were done with Butch Jones. I mean, shy of them having a great year in 2017, he wasn't going to win back a big chunk of the fan base. And, of course, they were terrible in 17, so it made the decision easy in the end. But I don't – you know, guys in that scenario, in those high-expectation jobs, when so much of the fan base has moved on past them, it's really hard to rally back. Brian Kelly is – that's a really good example, because that is – that's a job with similar expectations to Florida. And yeah, he is a good example of someone who overhauled things from top to bottom, really, and did a nice job rallying off that hot seat. But yeah, the examples are very few and far between.
There's a reason why you can name them. You know what I mean? Like, that's how rare they are.
Yeah. Well, Blake, as we delve into the coaching carousel, I've been calling it potentially a coaching gravitron this year, but the coaching carousel that Florida may or may not be on. Your latest top rope column over at, you can read it at commercialappeal.com or any of your favorite Gannett sites. You have this little disclaimer on the headline / section of it. Lincoln Riley and Jimbo Fisher rebuff LSU rumors. Only one sounds convincing. Which one and why?
Yeah, it's Jimbo. And I go on to say that you really can't believe any of these coaches. I mean, coaches rank right up there with politicians, lawyers, and used car salesmen in terms of truthfulness. But Jimbo finally gave us a reason Monday, I think, to believe that he's not going anywhere. You know, he's already tried the, I love my ranch, my family loves it here, I love my bosses, blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares about that. Coaches say that all the time and they leave. The families always love it in that town.
What's
and
he
going to
say, I hate my bosses? Like, you know?
Well, in fairness.
Yeah, you're not going to say that.
He loves his bosses because there's a 0% chance Ross Bjork can ever tell him what to do.
Well, yeah. Jimbo's got one of the greatest contracts in college football, for sure. But finally, Jimbo arrives at a real reason to stay. He says, I might recruit the best class in the nation this year. And that wasn't hyperbole.
No.
Texas A&M's class right now, I think it ranks number 3 in the 24/7 sports composite, but it's right there with Georgia and Alabama. This is going to be a great class for A&M. And so that reason, Jimbo's not recruiting like a guy who's got a foot out the door. He's not. And so when you look at it through that lens, and as Jimbo said, you know, I can't remember him paraphrasing, but he basically said, I'd be an idiot to go out and sign a class this good and then leave. And I think he's right. Like, if he's going to sign,
well, Blake, unless you can take him with you.
Well, yeah.
That's easier to do in basketball. We saw that here in Memphis with Cal Perry. But
yeah. It's going to have to be a pretty quick pivot here if he's going to do that. He needs to sign on the dotted line like today and get to work on that. It would be hard to pivot that quick. That's one of the things that this December signing period does. If it was still just the February signing period, I'm right there with you. You could leave and take all these guys with you. That December period, that makes things a little harder than it used to leave a job and take everybody in your recruiting class with you. So I think I'm finally ready to say, like, I'd be a little surprised at this point if Jimbo up and leaves A&M for LSU. Now, Lincoln Riley, his reasoning was, quote, I'm the coach at the University of Oklahoma. Okay.
Yeah.
We all knew that. That's a statement
of
fact.
Well, yeah.
Touche.
I think, I think if you go back to every year of the coaching carousel over the last 10 or 20 years, you can probably find a coach who said the exact, insert school name here, exact same sentence structure as Lincoln Riley used.
And I bet you the hit rate on guys who said that who left, I'd put it over 50%. That's total me throwing it out against the wall. But like, it just feels like an answer that someone gives.
Anecdotally, that feels true.
That feels like an answer someone gives who's saying, "Well, I'd listen." You know, like at the very least,
you have my number.
Yeah, he's basically screaming, "Please call me. Please call my agent, and at least make a run at me." I mean, that's what his quote to me said was.
The least you could do is get me a raise.
Yes, I'm willing to hear out all suitors, even if I decide in the end to stay at Oklahoma, be burning up my agent's cell phone. That's what that told me. So, yeah, I'm not ready to rule Lincoln Riley out for LSU by any means. Jimbo, I think we're moving past Jimbo at this stage.
Yeah, I also thought I said this to Mark on Monday. The Ole Miss loss for A&M, that's another reason why you don't leave A&M for LSU. If you lose by two scores to Ole Miss at LSU, you are very much on the hot seat. Like, that's just not something they put up with. At A&M, I'm not saying everyone was, you know, backslapping and being like, "Oh, it was a good game," whatnot, but it's not the end of the world.
Well, we got the number one recruiting class.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming in.
You know what I mean? Like, he was quickly able. Like, nobody's calling for Jimbo right now, and to me, expectations matter a lot. But in that scenario, let's say Lincoln Riley does end up going to LSU, and again, I think I think that's the other aspect of right now. We're in more. Let's set the market right now of the coaching grab. What are you calling it?
Gravitron.
This is kind of rumor. This is like let's start getting some offers on tables, if you will.
Let me make sure that let me make sure the number for those national reporters is still the right number
exactly.
to fire off a text.
So, but I don't think there's been as much, let's say, positioning on the chessboard, I think, as maybe we would hope. I really think it's still way too early. But let's say that Oklahoma job does open. How worried would people in Knoxville be that Heupel gets a phone call that he has to take?
Yeah, I floated that idea to some Tennessee fans this week, and it is a little bit putting the cart ahead of the horse. But, yeah, if we're playing in this hypothetical scenario where Riley leaves, it would be interesting because on the one hand, you have, you know, Heupel undeniably is doing a good job at Tennessee this year. He's the former Heisman runner-up quarterback at Oklahoma who led Oklahoma to its most recent national championship. So all that says,
and for the record, there are negatives. He got fired there. Like it's not all roses there. Yeah,
that's the flip side. Is he was fired there, and there's some bitter feelings at the very least between Josh Heupel and Bob Stoops.
Yes,
whether those extend to the University of Oklahoma at large, I don't know about that. I don't see Josh Heupel and is not sitting down with Bob Stoops to sink a beer anytime soon.
Yes.
I'll say that. But does that mean he's going to thumb his nose at his alma mater just because Stoops fired him? I don't know about that. But for Oklahoma, and I don't mean this as a slight to Josh Heupel, but there's no way to say it without it sounding that way. I think Oklahoma is going to if their job would open,
yes.
I think they're going to shoot bigger than Josh Heupel. I mean, and that I don't say that to take anything away from what he's done at Tennessee this year. I think he's done a great job given the situation he inherited. But let's just rewind to like 10 months ago. I mean, UCF was not, they were not wringing their hands in concern over losing Josh Heupel. I mean, when Josh Heupel left, it was kind of like, okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, and now that could also be like a careful what you wish for, but you were 100% right. There were lots of UCF people that were like, good, because we can do better than what he was doing.
And they were, and then,
right.
And then they felt they did when they got Gus.
Yeah.
And then they got Gus.
Yeah, and I wonder if I wondered if maybe they improved their situation. It's not looking like that right now. So you're right. I mean, it might have backfired on them in the end. But I just don't know. You know, is Oklahoma going to buy in off of basically one season here of Josh Heupel? I don't know. I mean, they did hire a guy in Lincoln Riley who, you know, had nothing on paper in terms of being a head coach. But you know, you almost wonder if they would do something like that again and try it worked once. You know, would you go for the wunderkind offensive assistant out there again and try to make it happen? I don't know. I think
well, could Grinch could they do that, but on the opposite side where, you know, Grinch I feel like also has the greatest Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator, pretty sure he has like the greatest PR team of all time. Because I keep getting told the guy's a genius and that he's the smartest person ever. And every time I watch him, I'm like, hey, they look like they seem to give up a lot of yards and points.
The Grinch who stole the OU job.
Exactly. Yeah. Huh. The headlines write themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, he does have some of the best PR in college football. He's doing something right there. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, we're seeing this year where, like, it's kind of trendy to say, like, well, defense is back in style. We're going to see more schools hiring these defensive coaches based on what Kirby Smart's doing at Georgia. I don't know.
Well, I still think you can't rule it out because one thing we have proven over time, we're really dumb. And when something works at one place, we just, like, run it. Like, remember saving assistants or, like you said, like, offensive wonder kid. Like, we are whatever the trend is, we'll just hop on it.
Especially in, this industry is so much a victim of the moment.
And
whatever is working right now at one school, you know, one school, it's working really well. Well, everybody else tries to copy that. I thought that was really interesting this week. Nick Saban was basically asked on the SEC teleconference on Wednesday, does the old cliche still apply that defense wins championships? And even Saban, who up until this 2020 national championship, really all the championships he won before that were on the backs of the defense. He said basically, yeah, you need to have a good defense, but I'm not sure that cliche really applies anymore. Now, he wasn't talking specifically about Georgia. He was more just making a broad comment. And he's not really sure this whole defense wins championship still applies in this era of college football. But I thought it was interesting to take that comment and then view it through the lens of Georgia, because that's what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to apply that old cliche and win as old school Bama. And you've got the guy who won five titles doing it that way at Alabama. Skeptical that can really work in today's college football.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you were there in person, and Connor, my producer, and I, we do a weekend show, and basically we just sit and bet on football all Saturday. And I want your thoughts. What was Stetson Bennett like in person? Because I know his numbers were fine, and he had some key scrambles, but as Connor and I said, Stetson Bennett's not the first quarterback to run on Tennessee and extend a drive. Like, that's basically been rinse-repeat all year this year. I still have my doubts that if they go up against, like, an Ohio State, maybe Alabama, although I'm less sold on Alabama's offense right now than I have been, but I'm not sold if they fall behind against an elite offense that he's the guy that just throws them back into it or gets them back into it.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I think Georgia, you know, they would be in trouble if they have to play from two touchdowns behind. But I'm not sure that situation is different if JT Daniels is in there. I'm just, you know, I was one of those for the longest time that thought, you got to play Daniels. You got to play JT. He's a five-star recruit. But if we actually look at what JT's done throughout his career, he looked pretty good down the stretch last year, but he was not playing against a who's who of college football. He missed.
What are you talking about? He played against the greatest defense of all time, 2020 Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Don't believe it? Mm-hmm. Just ask Cincinnati fans,
yes.
Right? Yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like there's a savior waiting in the wings. I do think, you know, it's easy to say that Kirby's falling into this trap that he did, you know, in the past of playing Jake Fromm over Justin Fields. But I don't know. I think Kirby's playing the guy who gives Georgia the best chance at this point. I'm not convinced that JT Daniels would flip this switch and turn this offense into something totally different. Can Georgia win at all with Stetson Bennett at quarterback? I think so, but I'm not. If you had Bryce Young as Georgia's quarterback, there'd be no question.
Yes.
Or Matt Corral as Georgia's quarterback, there'd be no question. They would be.
Heck,
they
I'm
would
not
be
so sure.
Far ahead of
Hinton Hooker, man.
Yeah, I mean, you could darn near just declare the whole thing over right now. I mean, they would be such an overwhelming favorite for the title, but because you got an unheralded guy in Stetson Bennett, a former walk-on, it doesn't matter how well he plays. That label is never going to escape him. It leaves just enough doubt in people's minds. But again, I don't know that this is the same scenario where Kirby had Justin Fields on the bench behind Jake Fromm. I don't know that JT Daniels is going to make a 180 on this offense. I think at this point, Kirby's probably playing the right guy. We'll see whether that's good enough in the end.
Well, I think another key difference, I actually think that Stetson Bennett beat out JT Daniels. Like, I think JT was going to be their quarterback this year. And then, you know, the injury happens, and then Bennett gives them at least an element of when he takes off and runs, he gives them a little something else. But, I mean, in the end, JT Daniels left USC not because the grass was greener. It's because he got beat out by Keaton Slovis.
Right. Yeah, people conveniently forget that. They look at the recruiting ranks.
Yeah.
Like this guy, you know, he's a star that's being shackled to the bench, but he hasn't shown that. And Bennett's running ability is like, that's the X factor that has him on the field. You were touching on it there, and we saw him make some runs against Tennessee. You know, he's not Matt Corral out there. He's not Deshaun Watson or Tim Tebow, but he runs well enough to be a factor, and that's something that JT Daniels really doesn't do. And I think Kirby likes that about Bennett, is he can provide that extra little wrinkle to the offense. But, yeah, seeing them in person – I didn't even think – I thought their defense, that was like their B-minus level. And still, even when they're playing at their B-minus level, it's pretty darn good. I mean, Channing Tindall leads Georgia in tackles, had 3 sacks in the second half on Saturday. That guy doesn't even start.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how deep they are at linebacker and really just up and down the defense. Is you got the guy who could be an all-conference player, lead the team in tackles, he comes off the bench. It's just amazing the amount of talent that Georgia has on defense.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I love when Bennett runs, he actually runs like we would run on an SEC field. He's actually, like, sneaky fast, but the way he runs makes it look like he's terrified. Like, he really, like, he kind of, like, runs with, like, his head cocked back. Like, he's always, he runs like, he's not running scared in the sense, like, oh, he's afraid of contact. It's just you can tell, like, he is panicked, and he's running, and it's just – it's fantastic to see. All right, let's
well,
get
it's it.
Well,
like he knows he's a 5'11 quarterback, yeah, and he's ready to get de-cleated from by
yes.
someone out of the corner, which is probably a good thought to have in his mind.
What else interests you this week?
Alabama, like – you know, last week, did that mean anything? Probably not. It was a terrible group of five opponent. We're still waiting for Alabama to peak and for us to think that, okay, yeah, they can go toe-to-toe with Georgia. I think we've all been waiting for that, and it just hasn't happened against SEC competition. As you guys know, Arkansas ain't too bad. They're not Georgia.
Aren't they kind of like poor man's Georgia when you think about it? Like, Georgia's number – like, and poor man, I mean that in, like, a good way because Georgia's so good.
You're still – it's like upper middle class. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's like, you know, Georgia's got a bigger house and nicer cars. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like, so, you know, similar. It's like still 5-bedroom house, you know, but it's just nicer bedrooms, you know, nicer cars.
And the other thing with Alabama, I mean, they're down to 2 scholarship running backs. It's getting pretty bleak there
with
when you look at the
with
the
a shaky
of
offensive
back.
Line.
Yeah, with a shaky offensive line. I mean, it has to be the Bryce Young show at this point going forward, and he's looked like he's capable of starring in that role. But yeah, that's probably the other
game. If this game was in Fayetteville, I'd feel better about saying I just don't see Alabama losing. Arkansas has been a nice story.
It's this weird thing, though. I don't know what you picked, Blake, but it's this weird thing where being 20.5, it feels insulting to Arkansas. But at the same time, like, that was kind of like the thought process in the Georgia game, and I never felt like they were in it. And then at the same time, it's like Arkansas's defense has been good this year but not great, and they've kind of been susceptible in the passing game. And – like, there is just this element of, are we going to be sitting here on Saturday and they're up, you know, 38-13, and we were like, well, duh. Like, why didn't we see this coming?
Yeah, the only thing that gives me pause there is, you know, we think back, we were thinking the same thing against LSU 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
It was in Tuscaloosa. I think the line was like 29 points for that game.
28.5.
And it comes down. Yeah, 28.5.
I can confirm.
Yeah, I shouldn't doubt you on that. That's for sure. And it comes down to the final play. Like, I feel like some of these lines we're seeing on Alabama is like it's the lines we've expected over the years. You know, Alabama always just defied logic with the betting lines. I mean, even when they were number one, it seemed like still the lines were so incredibly lopsided when they were playing SEC competition, like good SEC teams, and you'd see Alabama favored by like 24 to 28 points or something. And it's like, my goodness, like, yeah, I know they're number one, but they're supposed to cover 28 points against a decent SEC team. And then lo and behold, they come out and do it.
But every time.
We really haven't seen that, though, with consistency this year. I mean, they blew the doors off Mississippi State, yes. But beyond that, I mean, they've had more more trouble finding their way to victory in the SEC than we typically expect from an Alabama team. But that's the thing about Alabama is, like, we can sit here and pick at nits with them, but, you know, this is still a team that's number two in the nation in the only rankings that matter. And I think still is in the driver's seat to make the college football playoff. And with Oklahoma losing last week, the path to Alabama getting in as a two-loss team has widened a little bit. And I said that, you know, in the initial rankings. I thought Herb Street was just out in left field there. By I thought it was a weird take by Herb Street to in the initial rankings to say, no way is Alabama going to get in as a two-loss team. Like, really? Like, it seemed like there was every opportunity to get in as a two-loss team.
In fact, Blake, I would go as far to say this college football playoff committee, this particular committee – led by Gary Barta, it feels like it was born to debate then put in a two-loss Alabama team at number four over an undefeated Cincinnati team.
I'll tell you what
they were born to do this, Blake.
Blake, they feel like they respect the A.
They do. They do. And here's the thing, though. If Alabama loses by, like, a field goal or, say, even a touchdown to Georgia in the SEC championship, and we all think Georgia's rightfully the number one team in the land, I would have a hard time keeping Alabama. I mean, the committee's going to get just pummeled, just absolutely pummeled.
Since when has that stopped them?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I know everybody's out there saying, like, well, the committee's never taken a two-loss team before. Well, they've also never taken a group of five teams.
Well, and
so
on top of that,
has to give.
If they're going to do something they haven't done before, they have proven they're pretty comfortable doing it with Bama.
Yeah.
They had never taken you know, the one-loss team that didn't even play in the championship game. Well, they took Bama. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the BCS, the first team to ever get a rematch.
That was computers.
Bama.
That was
But,
computers.
I mean, my point is, like, it's still the same people that are putting it together. Like, it's, like, Bama, but it makes sense that eventually a two-loss team's getting in, might as well be Bama.
Yeah, and it's going to be Bama. If a two-loss team gets in, it's going to be Bama and nobody else. But the other thing is, you know, we keep thinking, and I thought this too, it's either going to be two-loss Bama or it's going to be a Cincinnati. There's a world where both of them could get in. Two-loss Bama and Cincinnati both get in if Oregon loses. You know, if Oregon loses one of these games to Utah,
Oregon loses,
up,
let's say Ohio State loses, this weekend, loses to Michigan.
I got news for you. They were setting up one-loss Notre Dame getting in and Cincinnati not getting in. Mm-hmm. For the second straight week, a lot of mentioning about how quality that strength of schedule Notre Dame has is.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that happened, you know, I think some of the criticism of the committee is just like it's the in vogue thing to do. Actually, I don't have that many issues with the rankings the way they are. But if they put Notre Dame in the playoff over Cincinnati, then you can lump me in the group with all the people that'll be out with pitchforks.
Well, see, I'm rooting for it because I think that would at least get us to the 12-team faster. Like, you got to – we need things to get us to – I'm so out on the 14 playoff. I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm token in the scene in South Park. Like, I don't know. I'm out.
Yeah.
And if that gets us to it faster, sign me up.